rip their arm off.
Stop worrying about stupid procedures and do pull-ups.
This warning ain't about making stuff look pretty.
Why are we having this podcast, and why is it called the 5-Point Move?
I'm frustrated with the way our Greco guys in the United States are treated, because they are good athletes, they are good human beings that want to win. We got to help them get there.
What I want people to know me from, all of our results for everything comes from 5-Point Move.
You've never done the intro, right?
No, I don't do no intro.
I don't know, but either way, here we go. Hello and welcome to episode 47 of the 5-Point Move podcast. I'm Tim Hands, founder and senior editor of 5pointmove.com. You already heard Hall, he's involved. We're going to plow through Rome, talk about the Olympics, the Olympic Village, sort of. And then after the first segment, we move on to an old friend, and Hall should have been involved with this, Nate Angle, who's in St. Louis for the NCAA Division I National Tournament. Catch up with my very good, very close friend, Nate. The second segment, as far as guests are concerned, it's two-time U.S. national team member Xavier Johnson, X-Man, who didn't go to Rome, didn't go to Nice, because he and his wife welcomed in child number 3. We cover some of the aspects of fatherhood. We cover Xavier's mindset as he prepares for the trials and his just general perspectives on a couple of other topics. But let's deal with Italy. I don't know how much of it you really locked into. You know the results.
Yeah.
What is your initial impression just as a starting point for this conversation? Like, is there any kind of overview you have?
My initial reaction is, okay, how come we didn't have anybody in the finals? How come, you know, bronze medals? You know, we got to figure out why we're losing. We got to break down exactly where our guys are getting beat and start attacking those positions.
Did you see any of the highlights, such as Ildar's 4-pointer that he didn't get called for, he didn't get the credit for?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay, well, see, that is something interesting, because Ildar was going against Sarsenbaev from Kazakhstan, who's an excellent competitor. Okay. And so Ildar's down by, what is he? I think he's down by 3, and there are 11 seconds left. He gets a front headlock, pushes forward with it, comes to a halt, gets his position, gets his leg set, gets his feet set, brings it over the shoulder, over his right shoulder. They give him 2. And the reason why I thought it was interesting is because the call, I guess they were thinking, was inconclusive, because maybe Sarsenbaev's knee touched, didn't necessarily go feet to back. I don't know what it was they were looking at, but even upon challenge, they didn't change it. And even though that was a different sequence, we didn't encounter any weird, hey, this is now a 4-point move. This is, you know, like we were talking about a couple of episodes ago. And it's like, after all of this, after the rule changes and everything else,
you think that you'd give a guy the 4 points for hitting a good technique. I mean, if you want more action and you want to reward action, then you gotta call it that way.
Yeah, and it's like, this is the controversial call, something that we already had in the books. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
This was the one. But Ildar, I thought, you know, for a guy who's well into his 30s now, hasn't competed since March of last year, I thought he looked sharp. So I would reckon that you'll have at least 15 minutes of your life available in the next few days. I'll send you YouTube links, because it's on YouTube. He looked really good. Ben Provisor, as you know, Ben went against Emrah Kus from Turkey, prolific reverse lifter. Everybody knows this. The way that I usually say it is that my daughter knows Emrah Kus is a reverse lifting kind of character. And I talked to, you know, it's funny, I talked to Ben after he wrestled Vera, the other night, and
yeah.
You know, Ben was telling me that, like, I mean, he didn't feel great. He didn't have a, you know, just his weight, something was bothering him, whatever it was. But he actually made it sound as though, even though this wasn't his weight class,
yeah,
it actually sounded like this one match might have done the trick for Ben if he even needed it. But he was like, you know what, like, this has refocused me even more now. And I was like, yeah, that's probably the right idea.
Exactly. I mean, if you're happy with not winning a medal at that tournament, you know, it's crazy. I mean, that was just a warm up to see where you're at. You know, the Olympics is going to be 100 times tougher.
Right. And that was something I brought up to Lindland, not that specifically, but in the Lindland report, this is something we've all talked about 100 times since September, but is the idea that the Europeans specifically are further ahead by some sort of margin because they've all had competitions pretty much. Most of the European countries have participated in at least a couple of tournaments since October, if not their own domestic tournaments.
Yeah.
Yep. And we had a bunch of guys in Rome who really kind of haven't wrestled a ton, if at all.
Just practice. Yep.
But Matt was like, hey, yeah, you know, we had rust. There was rust in other nations too, though. He was like, it wasn't exclusive to just us.
Yeah.
And, you know, that might be fair too. And he also went on to say that for a lot of these guys, it's also not that time of year yet either. So, which is something you always have.
The only thing that matters is July. You know, the trials matter, but then July. I mean, you got to win the trials to get to the big show. So those tournaments don't mean anything. It's a gauge for him, and it's like Ben said. He goes, "Hey, it's time to get serious now." I mean, he's right. That's the right mindset to have.
Yeah, and I know that it was informal to a certain degree, and Ben and Vera spending time together this very week and all that, but. You know, Ben wasn't messing around versus Alan Vera in that match. I mean, he wasn't.
No.
You say what you want. I mean, I don't necessarily put a giant, enormous amount of stock in, you know, whatever you want to call these exhibition matches, streaming cards and stuff like that. I don't. It would be ridiculous for me to do that because then you're risking contrasting it against actual world level or even national final level matches, which is that's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when two guys are competing and it's I don't care what the venue is, if they both agree that it's serious, then you do got to take it seriously to an extent. And I thought Ben looked really tough against Alan Vera, especially considering that he gave up, you know, whatever it was. I don't know. Ben was about 83 kilos. The weight class was supposedly 89.
And, yeah.
You know, Alan Vera, you know, he's not him. He's tough to deal
with. He's not a slouch.
No, he's not a slouch. And, you know, he could just walk into underhooks if he so chooses half the time. Yeah, So
what was Lindland's take on it, on the tournament over there?
That guys were actually just pretty much grateful to have even gotten overseas at this juncture more than anything else. Just the fact that they were even able to get over there and get a couple of matches in is a motivating factor.
Yeah.
Considering how the mood was, I would say in November even, or you can even go further, December, January, amongst some athletes. I think of that as a really big positive because this has obviously been quite a struggle for plenty of guys too. You know, just not knowing what's going on, if we're going to get in any matches before the trials. Maybe we don't need to get in any matches, but we feel like we should, you know.
Yeah, no,
just
for
that
sure.
Whole balancing act mentally, just it's excruciating for some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's 3 weeks out.
Yeah, right. 2 weeks from last chance or so and whatever. And then we have the national tournament this weekend, which I will pay attention to in the most casual manner plausible, I would think. I'll pay attention to our Greco guys, you know, Taylor Lamont, Peyton Omania, Colton, whomever. But I'm trying to get into it. You know, Nate's on this episode, so I'm trying to get into it for his sake and for others. And I will to a certain level. Like, we're in an Olympic trials year. I can tell you that Saturday night. Yeah, I'm going to be writing. Like, I'm going to be writing. I know it. Like, I'm not going to be watching ESPN or something like that. There's a line I tend to draw. Nate's charged up. Nate's in a good mood. He's in really good mood. Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Hopefully, he's down in at the Nationals right now, correct? Because they got to be there 3 days early.
Yeah, he's so Nate is in St. Louis now. So whenever the Nationals end, that's Saturday night, right? The NCAAs.
Okay. Yeah.
So you figure he probably breaks out of Missouri on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Fort Worth for last chance qualifier. He doesn't leave Fort Worth for over a week.
Wow.
There you go. That's how you do it.
So does he got any Greco guys going or, you know, to that qualifier? And
yes, Nate does. Guys? Yeah, Nate has to coach, and he talks about it. He has to coach Isaiah Martinez, Oregon State people, Beaver Dam RTC people.
Yeah.
And then he also has to coach as a club coach for NYAC.
Yeah.
Multiple hats.
Yeah, he's going to be busy.
Yeah, he's going to be, he'll probably be the busiest coach there, I would think.
It's going to be interesting to see if we have to wear masks in the venue for the trials.
Yes, you have to wear masks in the venue. I can tell you that now. Yep. You want me to stitch you one up?
Nah, I'm good.
Hey, do you know what I found cleaning out the office?
What?
Dennis Hall poster.
long time ago.
I have a Dennis Hall poster. I have the World's Greatest Detective series, which is Batman. That's a series of comics, World's Greatest Detective. And I have, I don't know if you know the movie Life with Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite movies of all time. And I have a giant poster for that. Wait. Giant. It's vinyl, in fact. It's not paper.
Really?
Yes, it's awesome. And I haven't, when we moved here 8 years ago, I never took anything out. Like, I didn't. You know,
yeah.
If I'm going to put up stuff, I'm married with kids now. I can't just put stuff up like I'm in a dorm. So I have to get frames. And I was like, okay, I'm not getting frames. So when I think of this, I'll come back to it. And I just never got back to it. So,
yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
No, it was interesting. I was on the Mentor program call the other day for the Greco team. And it was pretty cool, man, seeing all the former, guys on the call that want to help out and give back to the athletes that are preparing for the Olympic Games. It was pretty awesome deal. Hopefully, the guys that are on the call, we can make a difference and help the guys with whatever they need. It was a good call. It was neat. I wish they had that when I was competing.
Did you discuss various hypothetical situations like, well, if an athlete comes to us with this, we should be telling them this?
It was just kind of an introduction on what we were doing. But, I mean, we talked about stuff. And, it was just neat because so many guys had different training circumstances, different things. Some were married, some weren't when they were training. So we got a bunch of guys together with a hell of a lot of experience and a lot of medals. It is our only purpose just to give back and help these young guys out that don't know what they're going to be facing when they make an Olympic team. Or maybe they made one before, but they didn't get a medal. What was the difference in the one where I won my medal? I mean, and I could kind of point that out. It's about being able to share stories and get the guys through the tough times and more about mentally getting them prepared.
When you talk about some of the things they might encounter, does that include the relative hoopla surrounding it, the increased attention, then once you get in the country?
That's just a typical example, I mean, depending if they allow fans there, you know what? Our job will be to help these guys set up fundraisers so they ain't got to think about that stuff. Help them, point them in the right direction, point them to people in their own area that can help them, figuring out ways to get their family to the Olympics so they ain't got to think about who gets to go and who doesn't get to go, and the guilt of, you know, not being able to pay for one family member over another. You know, I mean, that's just a typical example of, you know, something that nobody thinks about. I mean, you're talking to guys and saying, hey, what do you need for your pre-competition meal? We're going to have that ready at the Olympics for you. If they don't serve it in the Olympic Chow Hall, we'll make sure we get that meal for you. You know, I mean, there's so many little things that can throw a guy off. And if you can, you know, line up everything and make it as normal as possible for these guys, you know, that's the goal, is just to take the stress off the guys and help them get through it. You know, they're going to get a lot of media coverage. How do you deal with that? What do you, you know, it's just a different thing once you make an Olympic team. There's so much more that people don't see.
No, they don't see it. And I got a good, I wouldn't say a front row seat, but I definitely got a good view of it in 2016, because the Rio Olympics were, I don't know, 5-6 months after Five Point launched. Even then, it's like you're seeing guys get interviewed nationally who you've talked to on the record, like, rather intimately. You know, it's a weird kind of feeling.
No, for sure. It's totally different. That was a really interesting call for me. I mean, so many guys on there. And the cool part is Chael Sonnen's going to be doing some stuff with the guys once they make the Olympic team. And, you know, just kind of getting guys' stories out there, too. So, I mean, it's neat to see a guy like him that, you know, has a lot of respect for Greco-Roman wrestling. He does. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, for him to want to give back and help out, it was good to see him on the call. You know, and he's loud. He'll do it in a good way, I'm sure.
They can use the momentum. Yeah. Whoever makes this team, they're going to be able to use that momentum to kind of crack through a little bit more. I don't know how big of a deal this is or not, but this is kind of an aside. But I was thinking, like, the guys who make this team, now let's ignore the stuff about the World Team Trials for a moment, because that's like some kind of looming shadow, it almost feels like, how guys who make the team are going to have to come back and then take a short rest and then all of a sudden prepare for a trial. So let's ignore that whole mess for a second.
Yeah.
It's that athletes are probably, I don't know if I'm right. I haven't asked anybody this. I haven't asked Matt this. Wrestlers who make the United States Olympic team, or any Olympic team for that matter, from any country, I don't think, I shouldn't say I don't think, I wonder if they will be able to have a, you know, that back end little vacation, you know, stay for a few days in Tokyo or in the area, like is like the norm. Like nobody just competes and then leaves the next day. But I'm guessing that that's probably not the case this time. I imagine there's probably some kind of restriction or restrictive measure in place to where it's like, yeah, okay, you're done. You're back at the airport.
You know, yeah, who knows what that, and that sucks if that is the case. These guys train their whole life to be able to get the Olympic experience, and if they don't, you know, and I have no idea on how, what's going to go on that way. For them not to get that total experience, it would be insane.
They've already talked about the village and how to deal with the village and separating people at the village and whatever else. I just figure a natural byproduct would be like, okay, well, when you're, whatever your event is, whatever your sport is, when you're done, you're done. Unless you have like a hotel and you are allowed back into whatever, you know, whatever stadium, arena, wherever the games are being held, specific events.
But I mean, as an athlete, you'd be able to go to some events and check events out too, but it all depends on if they just want the athletes in and out in a quick turnaround.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
And that's what would suck as an athlete, is if you don't get to really kind of hang out and check things out. And that's going to be up to the host country on how they deal with that stuff, you know, especially with what we got going on in the world right now, the craziness of what's going on. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I get it. I haven't chased this down a rabbit hole. I haven't pursued it. I'm not that curious at the moment. But it is something that's popped into my mind. I know for you, you loved being able to do stuff. You loved the extracurriculars.
Yeah. I mean, I stayed after. I got done competing in 04 for another week or so. I believe a week. And just saw the country. I did a lot of sightseeing with my family, and it was great. You know, it was fun. You know, and for guys not to possibly be able to do that, it would suck. You know, they're missing out on something that, you know what, they'll probably never be back in Tokyo after the Olympics, you know. So they're actually possibly getting ripped off of a hell of an experience.
You know what the response to this is going to be, right? You know that, yeah?
I hope you agree with me.
I agree with you. That is stupid. Somebody else is going to say, well, they should be thankful they're even going.
Now they should shut the hell up and realize what's going on in the world. I mean, if you're afraid to die, stay home. You know what? I ain't afraid to die. When God calls me home, he's going to call me home, and I ain't going to get a second longer. So you know what? I could care less what the hell's out there. You know what? When it's my time, and I ain't going to get a second longer. Even if I have the most money in the world, I can't buy another second. And for people to say that, you know what? Go live in your house for the rest of your life. I could give a shit. But to rip off people of a hell of an experience of a lifetime that they've worked their entire life for, you know what? It's wrong.
I didn't mean to incite that out of you.
No, it's not inciting. Now, you know what? I'm sick of catering to the pansies out there. I'm done. I'm not gonna do this anymore. You know what? I'm gonna speak my mind, and you know what? If people don't like it, don't listen.
Well, they listen. They listen.
Yeah, but I it is. It's ridiculous. You know, you work 20-some years for a lot of these guys in the sport to have an experience of a lifetime. You've earned the right to do it, and then to be told you got to go home, you know, or whatever. I'm just saying that's what they decide. That it's wrong.
I just imagine that
it's like the guys that got boycotted in 1980. I would have been so pissed, you know, if I were those guys. You know, some of those guys should have medaled in the Olympic Games and could have had a medal around their neck when they got back to the United States, but they didn't get to compete. Why? Because of some bullshit. And I call it for what it is. I mean, it changes people's lives not being able to compete in the Olympics.
Yeah, it does. I can think of several off the top of my head. As I imagine you could as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's what frustrates me is when people, you know, say you should be happy with, you know, being able to compete or, you know, whatever your example was. It's like, you know what? You don't understand, man. That's what these guys put their entire lives into.
Yeah, they're putting their entire lives into
the pursuit of excellence.
It's not even just
the pursuit of excellence.
The pursuit of excellence.
It's something that people have no clue. Absolutely no clue about. You know, they're getting up and doing shit that the average person would never do. You're getting up and you're doing it. You're perfecting your skills to the best of your ability. There's so many days where you want to beat your head against the wall when you're doing it, but you know there's a reason why you do it. And a belief in your heart. You know, it's no different than the belief that I have in God and Jesus. You know, it's that type of faith that you got to have when you compete at that level.
Well, now that we're, 5 months or so, I guess, foreign change or whatever it is, do you at least feel good about the fact that the games are happening, considering that just a couple of months ago, people were freaking out because they were hearing stories that it might not?
Yeah, definitely. I'm happy as hell that they're happening. You know, and we got some guys, I think, that were on the 80 Olympic team that, you know, are possibly on the 80 Olympic team that were on that call. Chandler's an example of a guy like that that was on the 80 Olympic team and didn't get to compete. You know what? Who knows if he would have won a medal that year? I don't know, you know, but we'll never know that because it didn't happen. And that's something he can tell the guys, hey, at least you're getting a chance. If they don't allow fans into the arena, which they may not, he'll be able to just say, hey, look at it from this perspective. And that's a good thing. So I don't know. Hopefully that made sense.
No, it makes sense because you're looking at this, first off, as someone who's been to three Olympics and has a medal to show for it. That's number one. Yeah. Number two, there's also, I don't want to say a combination because you're their ultimate objective of winning a medal, but there is an experience attached to this too. It's an overall experience.
Exactly, 100%. So, I mean, I definitely am happy that the guys are going to get a chance. I mean, it was canceled last year. Who knows? Who knew what they were going to do this year? But it looks like it's going to go on. So these guys, we just got to get them ready as good as we can and hope for the best.
The European Olympic qualifiers this weekend. It's Saturday and Sunday. Saturday's the real day because Saturday's going to have the semifinals, which is obviously that's the clincher round.
Yep.
Okay. And then.
If you're already qualified, you don't get to compete, correct?
That is correct, of course.
Yes. Yep.
And then the second week of April is the Asian Olympic qualifier.
Okay. Yep.
This is how I see it.
Does Japan qualify all the weight classes automatically? Do you know? I'm just curious.
No.
No? Okay. Because I know in some of them, in some of the past Olympics, they added
the whole country gets a berth.
Yeah.
Mag berths.
Yeah.
No, Japan, in fact, they have to qualify five. They're one in at 60.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to get another one. They might. But what I was going to ask you to present my opinion and then hopefully you talk to it.
Yeah.
Now, overall, any European championships, European games even, they're always excellent. The European qualifier, sick.
Yeah.
That said, not to discount the African Oceania, but
yeah.
We got to be realistic here.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
I get it.
It's that for Europe, it's for me anyway, I'm most interested in, let's say, 77 and up, whereas for the Asian qualifier, I like
lower,
60 and 67 more. Okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. Like, not that
67. I'm interested in all the weights. I mean, that's just, it's like a world champ.
No, it is. It's just that I think the better brand of wrestling in the lighter weight categories is found in Asia as opposed to Europe.
Yeah, but if you look at, overall medals over the past, how many years.
Europe is far and away.
Animal.
Yes, I understand that. I'm talking from an entertainment aspect. I would rather watch 1667 for the Asian qualifier.
They're going to be throwing arm throws and, physical and just unbreakable positioning by those guys. I mean, not unbreakable. They'll break eventually. But, their positioning and their fight is just such a high pace. And it's physical. And they're physical. Those guys are physical.
I just like Asia better for the lightweights. It's a better style to watch. Remember Ildar really hammering that on the record a couple of years ago, talking about the difference between the European school and the Asian school. And I thought, the way he described it was such a service.
The Asian is more physical at the lightweights than the European, no doubt about it.
Yeah, Europeans is very positionally based.
It's positional based, and the Asians are, I'm just going to beat the piss out of you physically.
I don't want to say the best athletes at the lightweights are in Asia, because that's not the way I would want to say
it.
But definitely the more innovative.
Yeah.
I think that's probably fair, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Are you going to be into this when you get a chance Saturday and Sunday, or are you going to be wearing a headgear watching ESPN?
No, I ain't for now. I'd rather watch Europeans for sure. I mean, I may end up watching some of both, but Yeah, definitely the Europeans is going to be the one to be watching, because then you can kind of figure out, number one, you can see who's qualifying, get some film on those guys, and help the guys figure out how to beat them.
Well, right, because at 77 and 130, we're looking at a process of elimination as far as the United States is concerned, because we have to still qualify 77 and 130, so you know, at Europe and at Asia, and if you want to throw in Africa, Oceania in there, super. But you know, okay, well, these are the guys who are remaining. These are the toughest, at least you'd think, the toughest guys around, or at least nations, to be honest, because some of these nations are two or three deep at 77 and 130, at least 77 anyway. 130 is kind of a crapshoot, but...
Yeah, no. It's good. It'll be interesting to see how many guys, who's all not going to qualify. I'm talking from, what countries, how many medalists are going to be at that last chance qualifier.
I remember when the Kazakhstan Nur-Sultan Worlds were coming, and you saw the way that tournament unfolded, and then you start looking ahead, like, this is before, of course, everything got postponed a year. But I remember conversations with you, with whomever, last fall of 19, anyway.
Yeah.
And we're looking ahead, and it's like, that last qualifier, that last Olympic qualifier in Bulgaria, is going to be almost as tough as the Olympics itself.
It's going to be a real deal, man. You know, these guys know what's on the line, man. You know, all those guys are fighting for their life. You know, to represent their country in the best sporting event in the world. They know it's do or die time. You'll see a lot of, in that last chance qualifier, you'll see guys doing whatever they have to win. It sucks. I get it, man. Trying to qualify to weight. In 2000, I had to qualify to weight at the Pan Ams for the weight class. You know?
And you don't even remember the match.
Yeah, I don't remember the match because I had a concussion before the match. All I remember is having to win, finding a way to win, and somehow I did.
Yeah, you got lucky. It was a JV guy.
Yeah, the JV guy ended up with an Olympic silver medal.
Send a message everyone understands with BarbarianApparel.com. Create a team store and get started on a complete line of battle-ready gear that turns heads in the stands and looks even better as you turn opponents. Fully customizable options are available in all singlets, two-piece uniforms, shirts, warm-ups, and much more. Folk style, freestyle, or the best style, Barbarian Apparel specializes in supplying wrestlers around the world with the look and feel they need to conquer the competition. Team orders and discounts are always available, so don't procrastinate. 5-Point Move fans, you can grab extra savings right now by using coupon code BA10. Barbarian Apparel. Style everyone notices, quality everyone respects. Okay, I'm joined by Oregon State assistant coach, former national team member, used to go to Northern Michigan. A lot of people know who this guy is, Nate Engel. One item with which I want to start is fatherhood. And that's kind of the theme, I guess you might say, for this episode, given that topic is featured sort of prominently in my conversation with Xavier Johnson that follows. But before you ever had kids, before Michaela was ever pregnant, Paul and I wondered what it would be like for you given college coaching, travel, recruiting, and so on. This season's obviously different from what everyone anticipated. But that being said, what kind of juggling act has this been for you so far?
I mean, to be honest, it's been really good. Obviously, Michaela is an amazing wife and mother and handles a lot of the workload, you know, and so without her, I don't know where I would be, but she's obviously been super helpful, and we've had family out from time to time. But you know, Chris is a great boss, and you know, he'll text me and say, "Hey, stay home today. Stay home. You know, come to practice later, but stay home and enjoy your time with the kids and help Michaela." And you know, because we all say like, "Happy wife, happy life." And if mom is not happy, right, then we're not happy. So, you know, like you said, this year has been a weird year with the pandemic, and we haven't had to go out and recruit and have kids on campus, and we haven't been overseas, and, you know, like my normal travel schedule. So, but, you know, I know in the future that I'm excited to bring those boys, you know, wherever I can to tournaments and bring them overseas and let them see, you know, the world through my eyes. So when they're older, you know, they can experience that stuff and, you know what to expect if they decide to go down that road.
Does it feel uncomfortable? Not uncomfortable, but is it odd in a way that what is essentially a really horrible situation in ever in our country's history, if not the world, has actually in a way been sort of advantageous? Like, I've thought that myself just because of certain peripherals in my own home. Like, we've gotten to spend a lot more time together. We've seen more stuff out of our kids than we probably wouldn't have, and so on. But for you yourself as a coach, it's like, okay, well, your wife gives birth to twins. If this were a normal college season, you'd be around a lot less, I would think, or at least
right.
A percentage less. So, like, do you carry any, I don't want to say guilt, but have you reconciled that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, like you said, you know, we've been able to spend more time with our families during this. And, yeah, I mean, to think what would it be like right now being a new dad? You know, and we weren't in this pandemic situation. Yeah, it'd be tough. I mean, you know, I'm always FaceTiming with my wife and kids as much as I can when I'm on the road. But, you know, I know that life's going to get back to normal soon. And that comes with, you know, with travel, as you and I both know. And so, you know, when that time comes, I'll be ready. It'll be tough. But, you know, that's the line of work that I chose to do and enjoy it and love it. And my wife, you know, when I met her, I was in wrestling. So she, you know, bless her heart, she's in it to win it. And she's passionate about coaching and wrestling as well. So, you know, that's helpful.
Oregon State, if I'm not mistaken, has, what, 6 qualifiers for this weekend's tournament, NCAA tournament?
Yep.
Okay, well,
yeah,
that's
6 qualifiers.
It's a big number, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We all know that I pay attention to college wrestling from a distance, but I would gather, presumably anyway, that you guys are extra proud of your student athletes due to the myriad scheduling adjustments and later than usual start.
Yeah, we're excited. I mean, finishing second in the conference, not that we don't want to win, but in year one to go from fourth to second is a big deal. And, you know, to challenge Arizona State at one point where we, you know, head to head matches, we win a few. It's a different story. But yeah, to get 6 guys through and they're all young, nobody's graduating, you know, for all of them to come back, plus the rest of the guys and the new recruits that are coming in, the future's really bright at Oregon State. And, you know, with our administration and, you know, we have a good backing and our coaching staff's a blast to be around. You know, it's just like a big family. So yeah, we're excited and just ready for our guys to do some work starting on Thursday morning.
Do you yourself, I mean, you've been in this spot before, so, but between college and between mm-hmm. junior world teams and things like that, do you yourself, because you're really established by now, Nate, like, do you still get nervous as a coach prior to a, you know, a big tournament, duel, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I still get the butterflies and, you know, things start going through your head and everything. But on the outside, you know, you got to be calm, cool and collected for your athletes, because if they see that you're nervous, then, you know, they're going to get nervous. But I mean, I think, yeah, the NCAA tournament, it's a big deal. You know, it's the national championships. But at the end of the day, it's a wrestling match, just like going to the world championships. You know, that was my message when we were at Junior Worlds 2 years ago, is like, hey, like, the only difference is these guys are foreigners and you probably haven't wrestled them before, but like, you've been training and you know what to do, and you know, you got to wrestle your match any way to win. And so same message we tell our guys, like, you got to dictate the match. You can't let them dictate the match. And, you know, I mean, that's the biggest thing. And, you know, for all the different tournaments I've coached between Junior Worlds, you know, Cadet Worlds, Pan Ams, you know, and helping some of the senior level athletes, it's just, you know, you just got to stay calm and believe in your athletes, and they're going to go out there and they're going to fight hard for you.
Yeah, that's actually a narrative I kind of want to run down real quick, given
yeah.
the various levels you've been coaching at. And, you know, and despite our personal relationship, I've never asked you these things privately, and that is, what is the difference, let's say, coaching, for you anyway, when you're coaching Greco Senior as opposed to coaching mm-hmm. college, aside from the styles, just, is there a different method of communication? Is there a different approach that you take with athletes, considering that as a club coach, even though you might know a lot of these guys, you're not in a room with them all the time. So, like, how do these dynamics change and everything like that? Like, how do you see it, these differences?
Yeah, I mean, I think the college athletes, you know, they're younger and they're going to make more mistakes. So you have to be willing to, you know, have more patience. But I think with the senior level athletes, you know, they kind of tell you what they need. And then, you know, you kind of make the practice around that, right? Like, obviously, you're going to make the practice how you want it to be. But, you know, they may, like, today I really need to work on this, whether it's parterre defense or offense. And the college athletes, you know, you kind of, you know, you got to teach a lot more to them because, you know, they're not as refined or as knowledgeable as the senior level athletes. So, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you just got to do what's right for your athletes and, you know, help them get ready to achieve those goals, those big goals that they have down. And, you know, it's a, you can't put a lot of like I've never been in this for awards or, you know, my athletes to go win world medals or NCAA titles. Like, I don't care about that. At the end of the day, I care about making them better men or better women, you know, depending on what style you're coaching. And, you know, when they go on from wrestling and move away, like, you just want them to be able to be like good citizens and successful in life. And I think that's what wrestling instills into them on a daily basis. So if you can get that message across, I feel like they're going to be very successful on the wrestling mat as well.
Is there a difference between coaching men and women?
I mean, sure, there's differences, but at the end of the day, like, men, women, they, you know, boys, girls, they all want to learn and they just want to become, you know, better versions of themselves. And that's, you know, that's truly why we're in it. But I don't think there's a difference necessarily. I mean, sure, coaching Adeline, right? Like, she was a 5-time world champ before I started working with her. And, you know, but she's, you know, she still wants technique and she still needs help. And, you know, but sure, when you're dealing with somebody like her, who's, you know, a lot older than an 18-year-old freshman in college, I think that's the difference. But, I don't know. I think I go about it the same way, you know, whomever I'm coaching. I still just keep instilling what I believe in and helping those athletes just grow. So I don't think there's too much of a difference.
Well, now the reason why I ask is because, you know, obviously I don't know. I've never been in your position. I've never coached women and men or whatever. I've never had to juggle that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's reverse sexism or something, but I always look at women, by and large, in their 20s especially, as like having it a little bit more together upstairs than a man does. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I always just think of the woman as like a little bit more mature.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, they really, I mean, obviously women's wrestling is growing every single day and it's evident, right? But I think that they just want to learn, you know, they want to learn and they want to learn bad. And they're just super thankful when when you're helping them and, you know, they're just, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun and, you know, coaching's coaching, kind of like Dan Gable said, you know, wrestling's wrestling. It doesn't matter what style. And same thing goes into coaching men and women. I mean, they're, you know, both sides are just, they're just fun to coach. And when they're successful, it's great. And, you know, it's just really neat to see them kind of jump levels, you know, both sides of it, right?
All right. Well, see, you said the phrase that I just, it makes me want to stick my head in the washing machine. And
what's that? Wrestling is wrestling?
Okay. So let me break this to you, if I might. Last week, last episode, in fact, I had Taylor Lamont on, and some of what we talked about kind of skirted the edges a little bit, if only because it comes off or came off as though I felt that Greco-Roman development in the U.S. depends far too much on technical skills than it does competitive tenacity, which the latter attribute is something folk stylers bring to the table almost automatically. So my contention is that it's not easy to get youths into Greco because there's not consistent competition throughout the year, and that as a consequence, let's say, those who do transition over to Greco from folk style wind up focusing more on what they're doing technically wrong instead of just going to battle until they figure it out. Do you,
right.
who you operate in both of these worlds seamlessly, do you agree with this assessment? Do you not? Do you have something to add? Because the way that I'm seeing it is, yes, transition kids over to Greco younger, fine. But if you do that in the United States, you cannot do that without offering more competitive venues. And the reason why I say this, Nate, and please, certainly, if you think I'm in some sort of weird gray area here, by all means, shift it. But the way that I'm seeing it is we have wrestlers, Greco-Roman wrestlers, that is, who it's like they forgot what made them what they are. They're so focused
yeah.
on underhooks and this and that and deep parterre D and all this. And it's like, well, they're not fighting anymore. They're just trying to do everything right is the way
right.
I want to say it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think, yeah, it's tough, right, when a college athlete after college switches back to Greco and instead of, like you said, just putting their in those situations and to figure it out. And Chris, my head coach, he all the time, like, guys will ask questions and he'll, you know, he'll give them the answer, but also say, you need to figure it out, get in those positions and wrestle in them. And that's what I think, you know, you watch a lot of like the freestyle practices, for instance, right. And they're sparring, they're getting into these positions. And I can't recall, you know, when I was competing that we sparred a lot, you know, quote unquote spar. And now that I've been on the folk style side of things, you know, we spar a lot in practice because it helps you just figure out those positions. You know, we'll say, hey, 10-minute spar and just get in some positions that you want to work. And guys are starting to figure out the positions. And so I agree. You know, when I started wrestling Greco, I had no clue what I was doing. I mean, luckily I had Yvonne Ivanoff as a coach, and then I had Dennis Hall and Jim Grunewald and Sean Lewis, a lot of great coaches, you know, that I was lucky enough to be around. So with Yvonne laying that base layer because he was so technical, but he'd also make us figure it out and get in those positions and fight. So yeah, I think that, you know, these younger guys that are getting into Greco too, just need to get in those positions and figure it out. You know, if you're not good at defending an underhook, hey, grab somebody and hey, we're going to wrestle live, but I want you to start with an underhook. And every time that I just pull out, we got to start right back over. You know, but I have to fight in there and get to the position that I want to win.
Exactly.
So I don't think you're off at all.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. You're saying it, obviously, from a more polished standpoint. I'm saying it from an observer standpoint, is that when you watch, we could talk about U.S. Opens. The example I always bring up is you see college athletes, college wrestlers who maybe they took top seven at Fargo 4 years ago or something like that.
Right.
And it's like, okay, the college season's over, so they hop in the Nationals. And they'll go up against a full-time Greco guy. And maybe they might not win, maybe they do win. But in either case, they just push the pace and they don't care about the rules. They don't care about anything else.
Right.
Meanwhile, we have the hardcore Greco guy. I mean, you could see the wheels spinning. You know, you could see them
yeah.
trying to think their way through it. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a recipe for success.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, look at Peyton Omania right now. Obviously, everybody's been seeing his headlocks on social media. But and you and I, you know, rest in peace to one of the greatest coaches I've ever been around, Coach Halverson. It's like, that's what they did. They literally wrestled Greco year round. And now that he's in college, you know, and he was a good folk style wrestler coming out of high school. And so, you know, he just uses those positions that he's comfortable in to his advantage, and it works. And that's why, like, when he started hitting all these headlocks against these top ranked guys and winning big matches, I kept tweeting out that, hey, like, coaches, like, you know, when I go do camps or I talk to young athletes, I'm like, man, you got to get into Greco. Well, why? Well, it's going to help your folk style. It's going to help your freestyle out. And it's going to help you learn how to hand fight and use your hips and get the underhooks and be comfortable there. And, you know, so I hope that, you know, people are watching that and seeing that, like, man, he's really good there. And I could do that. You know, like, well, why can't I be comfortable there? Well, because you just got to get in there and figure it out.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm trying to say. It's like, okay, we want to develop Greco-Roman athletes in our country at a younger age, which I 120% agree with. But
right.
until we are able to do that with an appropriate infrastructure, which
mm-hmm.
means regional training locations, I don't want to call them centers, but you go and you have like some network of it. And we do have something like that now almost.
Right. Yeah. With the Greco Grit group, right? Like we have all these coaches all over the country, you know, of every age level, and they're putting together practice plans and they're all sharing it. Right. And we just need more people, right? We need the other coaches that aren't into Greco to see that, hey, this is going to help my athletes. Well, it's really easy. Once you understand it, it's not hard. You know, you don't have to worry about your legs. I know I'm preaching in the choir talking to you, but, you know, this Greco Grit group that Coach May have, you know, and he's the hardest working person on the planet, you know, and so I hope to see in the next few years that the fruit of the, you know, his labor pays off, and I'm sure it will, right? But it'll be exciting when these young kids are going through this program that they're creating to help, you know, all coaches across the country. Hey, here's the plan. Just implement it, you know, just get your kids wrestling. And I hope that that's going to help grow more wrestlers, you know, at a younger age in Greco.
Do you think that we are no longer translating folk style skills into Greco?
No, I don't think that's true. I think that, you know, you look back in 2007 and obviously, I mean, now we're dinosaurs, but 2007 when they won a world title, right? Like literally the whole team except for, and Harry still wrestled a year of college at Iowa State, but all those guys, Joe Warren, Lindsey Durlacher, you know, Jermiel Byers didn't, but you know, he's an anomaly, but there was a ton of Brad Beering, Justin Ruiz, they all wrestled college,
all
right?
Very good college athletes.
Yeah. And so I don't think we're far off by any means. I think we just need to get a lot of these college guys, try to put it in their head early on. And, you know, I've had this conversation with you and Mayab and stuff, but like in the summertime, and even with Medlin, I had this conversation, like, let's find a central location to have a college camp and even invite high school kids, you know, as long as it's kosher with the NCAA, and bring out 60, 70 college athletes and bring their college coaches and make it affordable, you know, so nobody's making any money, but, you know, to pay for room and board and food. And we have a week where, you know, you bring out Coach Lindling, Coach Mayab, you know, Zach Dominguez, Andy Bezik, you know, Joe Betterman, Kerry Regner. I mean, you name it, right? Just bring out all these coaches, and and a lot of these kids that had success at Fargo, like you said, that plays top seven, all of a sudden they fall back in love with it. Guess what? Now we, you know, if there's 70 kids and we only get 20 of them, well, that's 20 more, right? And so I think that that's one way to go about it.
Well, Gary Mayab had something not quite like that. He didn't have like a one-shot deal thing, but if you remember, I'm sure you do, a couple of years ago, he had the freestyle transition camps. He had a few of those, and it brought, I mean, look, it didn't yield a ton of guys, but it brought out Dominic Bradley, who barely missed out on national team, might I add.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, he wrestled Greco growing up, obviously, because he was in the neck of the woods by Coach Mayab. And, you know, so it's great. And, I mean, there's a lot of these athletes that, you know, you look at Joey Palmer, right? Like, he's qualified for trials. He was wrestling freestyle forever and all of a sudden was like, you know, he's a good hand fighter and was able to then qualify for trials. Like, it goes to show that you just work hard enough, you can figure it out.
Yeah, and you battle.
Yep. Battle. I mean, that's it. It's a fight.
That was the one thing, not to get off the rails, but with Bradley's, if you want to call it, return to Greco, I mean, but when Bradley made it, when he was in the trials in 18, you see how he progressed in that tournament match to match, and it's kind of astonishing.
Yeah.
It really
is. Oh, for sure.
How he just started, like, easing into positions and everything else, and like it just started clicking. I was super impressed, and I know he's a fantastic wrestling athlete. Like I'm not dumb, but it was still really impressive.
He's got a high wrestling IQ.
No kidding. It was awesome. I thought that was such a like an undercover, like awesome storyline for that tournament. Unfortunately, didn't get fleshed out all the way, but I don't know. Anyway, we'll move on. I'm not going to keep you much longer because I don't know what time it is. And what time is it in St. Louis? Is it 9:36?
9:36, yeah. We're an hour behind you.
Oh, so that's where the hang-up is, Nathan. Because I'm over here thinking you're still in Cali. That's why when I'm texting you last night, I'm like, your time.
I'll all good. It's all good. I mean, I try to listen to my wife as much as possible, but that's the same thing. It's like, you know, we're always in the doghouse.
Well, they really got to get rid of, just completely eradicate daylight savings. There's no use for it anymore. It's not World War II. What are we doing? Did you know, Nate, that in the days preceding daylight savings, there's a much higher incidence of car accidents, people being late to work, people are underperforming at their jobs, general fatigue, kids aren't paying as good attention in school.
No.
You didn't know all that. No? They didn't cover that at NMU? You guys didn't go?
No, I missed that class. Unless Spencer paid attention, I didn't hear about it. We took a lot of PE classes.
You mentioned the trials, the Olympic trials. So you're out there, I guess, for starting with Last Chance, I would think?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to mention names specifically, but who are you out there for? Or is this a conglomeration of things, like guys from Oregon State and NYAC people? Is that how this is working?
Yeah. You know, from Oregon State, we'll have Mike Kosoy and Isaiah Martinez, and then we'll have the athletes from the Dam RTC, obviously, Adeline, Alyssa Lampe, Mallory Velty, and then, you know, then the NYC as well. So it'll be a busy weekend, you know, both weekends, but it's exciting. I mean, we're, you know, fingers crossed, we're almost to the finish line. So it's going to be more excited.
In your career,
mm-hmm.
have you seen ever a Last Chance qualifier quite like this? Like, it's almost on par with the Nationals almost?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, I wrestled in the Last Chance in 2008, and it was probably like a month before, at least, you know, from trials. But obviously, you know, there's nothing they could do. It's been such a weird year. But no, I mean, but I think it'll be good, right? I mean, people's weight will be down after they qualify, and they're just sticking around Texas anyway. You have to be there Tuesday for testing anyway. So they'll just stick around and, you know, rest a couple of days and train. And then, you know, it's not like you're going to ramp back up for 2 days and then, you know, start to taper again, right? Like you should already be tapering leading up to Last Chance, and then, you know, a couple of days of rest, start getting your weight back down and go wrestle.
Common tenor I get from athletes is that, yeah, here comes the Olympic trials. But at the same time, it's also like a weird vibe. Not that there's skepticism.
Right.
Some were talking about that a few weeks ago. Like, just as so long as it even happens. But now that we're almost there, we're, what, a couple of weeks? It's more like, you know, just wondering what it's going to look like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think so. But I think being at the NCAA tournament now, it kind of like gives us a good glimpse, right? Like of what can happen and that it can work. And, I mean, shoot, you know, it's like when you were growing up, when we would go overseas or wherever, right? Like, there's not always thousands and thousands of fans. Like, I don't know if wrestling at Olympic trials with zero fans doesn't get you fired up, because your chance to make an Olympic team and go win an Olympic medal doesn't fire you up, then you're probably in the wrong profession. So I think, you know, I think once we get closer, the athletes are going to be even more excited, because I think obviously with last year, right, it was like nip and tuck, like, are we going to have this? And then boom, it was canceled. And so it took a lot of wind out of their sails. But I think, you know, I think the week before, the week of, right, like, they're going to get fired up. It's not going to matter if there's zero people or tens of thousands of people in the stands. Like, it just is what it is. It's the Olympic trials, and they'll be ready to go, right? They'll have some good music playing in the background, and you'll hear your coaches, and that's it. You know, slap hands and go to work.
Okay, up now, one of the most dedicated, explosive, and talented lightweight athletes in the United States of America, as well as a great guy, that is Xavier Johnson of the Marine Corps. All right, Xavier Johnson, the one thing I want from you first is, for the record, and for the benefit of the audience, please state your age.
I'm 25 years old.
When was your 25th birthday?
July 3rd.
Right, okay. How many children you have now?
Three.
Okay.
Two boys, one girl.
All right. Do you see what I'm going with this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when my parents were your age, they had three kids. They got started really young. I mean, it really young. My mother was 16 when she gave birth to my brother, my oldest brother. And by the time she got to me, she was 23. So she was 23 and she had three kids. My father was 25 then. So he's probably your age. So I relate to it. But like, you do understand that 25 years old with three kids already, that's not everybody does that, right?
No, I definitely realized that, you know. But at the same time, it's like I always had this idea in my head where it's like I wanted to be young enough to where I can really like interact with my kids, and I mean physically, you know. Like I always wanted, you know, two boys, you know. I want to have training partners, and I spoke about this, I believe, in an interview in the past. It's like I always wanted to be, you know, that coach who's in the garage with his boys, you know, like rolling around with them. That's always been a dream of mine. So I think I'm on the right pace, you know. But this is it, though.
No. Okay, yeah. Oh, Ellis just—they had their third kid recently too in December, and so everybody says that. Everybody says, "No, we're done." But you know, I don't know. I don't believe it. Like I believe it, but I don't believe it.
Oh man. Oh, yeah. It's definitely. It's always, you know, that chance, but it's like we're going to take every precaution we can, you know, to mitigate that.
Mitigate that. What a word. Oh, man. Well, look, I relate to another part of your mindset, except I didn't have it because my wife and I, how old was I when our daughter was born? I was already 32. And then my son was born, and he was born 5 days after I turned 4 or 5 days after I turned 37. So you talk about wanting to remain physically viable for your children.
That's right? Correct.
Right. I think I kissed that goodbye. I think I did. Maybe already, but maybe not quite already, but we're getting close, I think. I think we're getting close. It wasn't an injury. I don't know what it was. But to give you like a little piece of context, about 2 weeks ago, like my lower back and my left side was really bothering me. Like just to do the dumbest stuff, like literally to put on slippers. Getting out of bed was like feeling like I just got mauled. It was awful. And Max Nowry, I texted Max Nowry and I was told him, I was like, my back is killing me. I don't know what the hell is wrong with me. And he said, that's what I said. I don't know what the heck's wrong with me. And he goes, stretch your hamstrings. I was like, stretch my hamstrings? He's like, I'm telling you, stretch your hamstrings. And he was absolutely right. Like, just stretching my hamstrings took away my back tightness. I guess it's, I thought it was because I was just, like, advancing in age rapidly all of a sudden.
It was just hitting you all at one time?
I swear to you, I thought that. I was like, well, yep, this is how it goes. Like, just overnight, like, after you pass the age of 40, just you feel fine. Then you wake up one day, and it's all gone. But then Max was like, no, just stretch your hamstrings. I guess because I'm, you know, maybe small guys. I don't know what it is. But he was right. Like, loosen my back up, like, you know. But at the same time, my son, he had been home from school because of quarantine. They had to quarantine his class for 2 weeks. So I had him mixed in throughout the day because my wife is, you know, she's observing normal work hours and I have to space out my work to take care of him and everything else. And it's like so physical sometimes with him. And I was just like, gosh, you know, what would this have been like if I were still in my 20s?
Mm.
Like I'm still active with him completely, but it's an effort.
No, I've had ACL surgery, and I had my fair share of injuries, but like I know for sure that, and speaking to my parents, that, you know, I feel a lot better than they did when they had me, you know, because I believe they had me when I was, well, my father was 30. You know, he told me about all the AT he had, because he's a big basketball fan, and we used to play basketball all the time together. And it took him a little more time to recover than it would do, you know, if I come home from practice and then, you know, roll around with my kids. But nevertheless, I do, you know, I have to stretch after I get done with them, and I'm only 25.
Okay, well, that makes me feel better, in fact.
Yeah.
That makes me feel better. And when you say ACL surgery, we need to clarify that for the audience. You really didn't have an ACL.
Well, yeah, so when they went in there, when I got the news, I was still, you know, on my medication. They said it pretty much, it just looked like it was already, you know, like, I guess maybe torn a little bit or whatnot, or maybe it was gone. I don't know the actual verbiage that he used, but it was definitely not like a fresh tear, you know. Like a bucket handle tear, I believe that was the term they used with that. And then obviously just, you know, wrestling for so long, and by no means have I wrestled long compared to other wrestlers, but just wrestling for the long time that I have, I have to stretch before and after, do the little things that, you know, you wouldn't think maybe an average 25-year-old that who doesn't wrestle has to do.
Yeah, but your body at the same time is your commodity. That's how you go about your life. You're not an accountant.
Yeah. I'd rather have this body than, you know, some 25-year-olds I know.
Well, that's what I try to sell to my wife, is that it's like you look at other guys my age, some of them, I think we live in a more fitness conscious climate now, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of guys after we even graduated high school, college, who just started mailing it in, letting it go. Letting it go. I mean, you're a pro athlete. Essentially, that's what you are. So it's, I think the bar's higher for you.
Yeah. Well, and I take pride in working out because, you know, my kids are at the age where now they see me working out. They like to work out, you know. We bought them a little, you know, foam, you know, dumbbells and all this stuff like that. And I see that. So that's something I wanted to put into them because, you know, I feel like this day and age, a lot of technology that's like taking over household. And I try to, well, at least pride myself on not doing that. You know, having them active, having them run or get on a trampoline or, you know, being active. I know if I do it, they see it versus me not practicing what I'm preaching.
No, it is important. It is. It's really important because first off, especially with quarantine over the past, you know, whatever, lockdown, shutdown, forced house arrest, whatever you want to call it over the past year now, my kids were driving themselves crazy, driving each other crazy. Because it was like, where are you going to bring them? You're not even allowed to, I mean, for a period, you weren't even allowed to really bring them anywhere outside, really. I mean, yeah. You couldn't go to the beach. You couldn't go walk the boardwalk. You couldn't go to the parks and all that. So what are they doing? They're in the living room. You know, one's on an iPad. The other one's either watching TV or my daughter, she's older. She's 9, so she's on a computer. Whatever it is unhealthy. It's not healthy for them. Right. I mean, forget about the physical part of it. It's just, it's not healthy for them intellectually, developmentally. It's just not. There's no question about it. A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think some of it's oversold a little bit, if only because I grew up playing video games. And, you know, we played video games in my house. So I think sometimes there are people who go too hard on it where it's like, oh, yeah, like it's poison. It's like, okay, nobody was really saying that about Sega, you know? Xavier, despite the fact that you and I know each other quite well, what are your kids' names, especially your baby?
My youngest son, his name is Cambridge Xavier Johnson. My oldest boy is Tremaine Xavier Johnson. And my daughter is Anala Naomi Johnson. So both of my boys got my first name as their middle name. I forgot how we came up with my daughter's name, but we sat on it. Like, I don't even remember us like going back on it. It was like, this is what we wanted. That's how those names came about.
Yeah, no, I remember Cambridge because I remember complimenting it the first time I heard it.
Mm-hmm, I remember that.
Yeah, no offense to the other one.
Well, it's like when I first had my first boy, I was like, oh, you know, you always want a junior, you know, but I was like, well, if I have another one, then I don't want it to be like, you know, he grows up and like, oh, you got dad's name and, you know, the whole thing like that. So he has my name backwards.
Right, right, right. Yes, I know that. I know your middle name. We did it kind of similarly. Not, my son is not a junior, for sure. Okay, like I actually dismissed that right from jump, as soon as my wife was pregnant, and therefore, shortly thereafter, we learned that she's pregnant with a boy. And I remember that question coming up, you know, do you want him to be a junior? And I was like, no. No, I don't want to pass on this insanity to somebody. Like, no chance. Even though my name is biblical, which actually both my names are biblical. But no, we just went a different direction. However, both of our kids share our initials. So my daughter's name is Molly Autumn Hands, which mirrors my wife's initials. And my son's name is Turner Joseph Hands. His name mirrors my initials. That was our little way of kind of doing something.
That's pretty cute right there. I like that.
Yeah, we're really smart. really creative. We go to the winter, and I remember right before the Marines left for France, I talked to Coach Jason Lukitas. Right after the Marines got back from France, rather, I talked to Coach Jason Lukitas. I was on the phone with him, and I believe your wife had just given birth, if I'm not mistaken, either the day before or something like that. And so he was like, yeah. So he goes, well, Xavier's not – I asked why you weren't on the trip, and that's what he said. You know, his wife just gave birth, and I was like, okay. Right. And he goes and he says, I don't – you know, we're going to see if he can be available for Rome. And obviously you weren't available for Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been in touch with you at least somewhat decently over the past year since shutdown and everything else. Did you really, really want to go to Rome or Nice and just obviously couldn't because of your wife giving birth? Or was there a chance you could have made it to Rome and you just decided to maybe just focus more on getting in last minute preparation for the trials?
Well, 100%, I definitely wanted to, I want to go to all the trips, you know, whether at training camp or a tournament. But this one was a little bit different because my wife actually had a C-section. So, you know, the recovery time was a little more, you know, a little bit longer. With her having recovery, maybe her complete the recovery, I didn't want her to, you know, just have to have all three kids at one time. You know, like, all right, you recovered. Now I'm gone. You know.
See you later. Good luck.
Yeah.
I'll call you.
You know that. I've been going a lot, you know, I've traveled a lot, you know, overseas, and he's had the kid for those all those times by herself, and now it's three of them, and including that third one is a newborn. So I didn't want to put the, you know, the burden, I wouldn't call my kids a burden, you know.
No,
the
it's
trouble.
A lot to handle, forget the fact that she had a C-section, it's a lot to handle, for sure.
Right, and I told him, you know, we understand what priorities are this year, and the big one that we know we got to get to. And I talked with Coach, and he totally understood where I was coming from. And he actually gave me the idea, like, you know, maybe not this trip, you know, because he understand that at this point in my career now, like, I know what I'm good at, I know what I need to improve at. Like I said in the past, I've got the guys in my room that's going to prepare me for what I need to, what I'm going to endure. So I didn't feel like I really missed out. I definitely wanted to be on those trips, though.
Dennis Hall has said, the last couple of episodes anyway, he has alluded to these trips as they only really matter if they matter to the individual. So in other words, you kind of decide prior to an Olympic trials how much something matters or how much something doesn't matter.
Right.
The Marines, and I'm not doing this as Marine Corps propaganda when I say this, but I was really, really interested in how the Marines looked in France because Pat Smith was on that trip to France as well, while he was already in Europe. Pat had been really active, going to all the camps. He had participated, obviously, in the U.S. Nationals. I expected Pat to be kind of competitively ready, I guess you might say. And in the Marines, I know what I think Jamel Johnson was in France, and the last tournament he had competed in before that was the Armed Forces Championship. So,
yep.
So you either had Marines in France who the last time they competed was March or the last time they competed was February of 2020, right? So basically everybody in France hadn't competed in a year. And what I came away with, my chief takeaway really was that, sure, I'm sure there was, you know, some adjustments necessary. Both Peyton Walsh and Stefan Witz alluded to these things. Like, yeah, it's been a while, you know, there's just getting used to traveling again and all the different stuff you have to go through even just to travel nowadays. But as far as on the mat, yeah, maybe there was some dust gathered. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't really come away with that. What I came away with was the opposite. I was really impressed how competitively prepared the Marines looked. And the reason why I say that is because although by now for you, it has been over a year since you've been in a competition, which the last one for you was Armed Forces, February of 20. Your room is so good. Your coach is so excellent. I imagine that, like, the fact that you haven't been able to get into any of these tournaments, I imagine that doesn't do anything to your confidence in her whatsoever. I imagine you're just as confident as you would be otherwise.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like I said, I love still watching I watch every match that, you know, my guys go to. But, like, my confidence, if anything, is even more the last time I competed because I'm so, you know, anxious. I'm so ready. Still have a lot to prove to the sport and a lot to give to the sport. So, you know, my confidence is still just as high as ever.
Well, you know what else I think works in your favor to a little, at least to a certain extent, I think really works in your favor, is that you did have that disruptive year with the ACL where you were basically gone for, what, 11 months? I think you competed at the 16 Open. The next thing was the November 2017 Schultz, if I have that right.
Yeah, no, that's actually.
There you go. So you've dealt with a long layoff before. There are a lot of other athletes who are trials qualified who haven't. They haven't had to deal with this before. Everybody was struggling with this to some degree or another, but I think there's something to the fact that you've already been through a hiatus too. Like, I think that probably is at least some type of arrow in your quiver.
Well, and I also think it really depended on the individual and the organization, because, you know, those times can make or break you, because it's too easy to just, you know, sit on the couch, lay down, and you're like, you know what, I don't have to prepare because I'm not going. But the guys who heed those opportunities to improve, like, I always pride myself. I'm like, okay, these guys come into a tournament, they're going to be gone for a month or so. When they're going to get back, they're going to be like, man, X is way bigger, he's way stronger, he's way faster. I'll pride myself on stuff like that. So I take the time to, you know, I guess you would say, you know, gain the upper hand on myself. You know, I want to get that much better in that little short of time that the tournament is going on.
You've got about a few weeks here. It's going to go pretty quick. That's the theme. That's the narrative. It's your first Olympic trials. Now, you've been in trials tournaments before, but it's your first Olympic trials.
That's correct.
Do you feel as though you're locked in a cage and can't wait to get out? Are there any kinds of feelings of, I don't want to say anxiousness, but is there any kind of nerves that might not normally be there? Like, do you have this elevated in your mind as a competition, or are you trying to compartmentalize it differently? Are you just looking at it, look, it's the Olympic trials, but it's also just another tournament, just like they're all other tournaments?
My mindset is just another tournament, and I've held that mindset, I guess, for every tournament. Now, mind you, I know it's the magnitude of this tournament, but at the end of the day, it's just another tournament. There's going to be another Olympic trials. So for me, just be so anxious and uptight and feel like I can't make a mistake, or this is it, I'd be doing myself a disservice, because I plan on being around the sport for a long time.
I imagine the kids help with this, having your hands full when you're not at practice and everything like that. But you have, you have class, right? And then you have your kids, so you don't even have time to be driving yourself nuts, I bet.
Oh no, I'm, you know, dad is, that's most of my day right there, is being a dad. So I don't really have that to, you know, worry. Fortunately for me, my kids love wrestling. They love watching film with me. Probably my daughter might watch wrestling more than I do now, you know. So I have a wrestling household, so it's a lot easier for me, you know, because I don't have to break up my time to where I need to wrestle. That when I work out, my family works out.
All right, and that was Xavier Johnson, 67 kilograms, All-Marine Wrestling Team, two-time U.S. National Team member. And it's kind of important to look at it this way, is that Xavier Johnson made his first national team in what was really his first legitimate full season. He had competed prior to the 2017-18 season, but as we mentioned, he had gotten injured, and it was in spots he was just learning. And then 2017-18, I mean, still learning. But he comes out like a ball of fire at 63 kilos, makes the national team, and obviously he made the national team again in 2019 because he made it to the World Team Trial Finals, aka Final X, which, now that I think about it, is apropos considering his name. But nevertheless, just a really dynamic, dedicated, explosive, hardworking, fun-to-watch athlete. He's everything you want in a United States Greco-Roman athlete in one package. As far as his skills, his talent, his ability, but his attitude. When we call people great people, we're grading on a curve because we're humans. We're all broken in half in one way or the other. But even still, Xavier Johnson he's a family man. He's a great guy to talk to. I'm really biased towards people who laugh at nearly everything I say. He falls into that category. And look at the Olympic trials. A year ago, well, a year and a half ago, before the 2019 December Nationals, I was of the mind that we might see him at 60 kilograms rather than 67. He kind of seemed like he was wavering a little bit, didn't know which one he wanted to be at. Then he, of course, took third at incredible match with Nolan Baker. I don't think his mind has changed himself. I don't think that he's going to go 60. He very well could. I don't think he will, though. Not with a few weeks left, but who knows? Either way, whichever weight class he's in, can get on a run. And if he does, it's going to be something to watch because the kind of matches that he's in, they're not going to be 2-1 matches. That much I can tell you. And then there was Nate before that, threw Nate some professional questions. And to be honest with you, Nate and I, off the record as friends, that's kind of how the conversations go. I mean, there's personal stuff and various sorts of banter. Nate actually talks like that. The one thing normal wrestling people don't know, I would think, is that behind the scenes, off the record, Nate has one of the most cutting, sarcastic senses of humor you might come across. You people don't know what Nate could be like. Listen to his voice, listen to the way he answers questions, and then imagine it. Like, you could picture it. It's very subtle. Anyway, I love him. He's one of my best friends. And to say that he's an immense asset to the United States Greco-Roman National Program would be an egregious understatement. Thankfully, we're doing enough of these at the moment to where you don't have to run too far ahead, and there really isn't a reason to. It's very simple. This coming weekend is the European Olympic Games qualifier. You can find that on Flow Wrestling. And on Saturday is the semifinals, which, as alluded to, that right there, the semifinals, that's what decides who qualifies their weight classes. So in a way, just like the Pan Am Olympic qualifier last March, the semifinals are like the finals. It's like championship weekend in the NFL, the conference championships, AFC, NFC. A lot of people prefer that day on the schedule to the actual Super Bowl. It's exactly the way you look at Olympic qualifiers. Semifinals are where it's at. Who knows if they even contest all the finals? But the semifinals are where it's at. That's going to be on Flow. Hungary from the east coast of the United States is only 5 hours ahead right now because of daylight savings. So 11:30 a.m. Budapest time is when the action starts. The semifinals, would look for that early afternoon, 12 p.m. Eastern time, thereabouts. And then the next week, it's very easy. That's the last chance Olympic trials qualifier for the United States. That'll be in Fort Worth, Texas. We're going to be heavy on that next week. And then we just keep plowing along. Just keep plowing along. Okay, social media concerns. To follow Nate Engel on Twitter and Instagram, it's very easy. It's his name, at Nate Engel, N-A-T-E-E-N-G-E-L. Xavier Johnson doesn't mess with Twitter, but you can find Xavier Johnson on Instagram with his middle name and then a different last name. I mean, it's the same last name, but he spells it differently. That is Tremaine, J-H-N-S-O-N, so I'll spell that out. T-R-A-M-A-I-N-E-J-H-N-S-O-N, if I can speak. You could also really just search up Xavier Johnson on Instagram, and if you follow any kind of wrestling accounts, I'm sure the algorithm will point you towards the right one. And yeah. To follow Dennis Hall on Twitter, if that's something you want to do, waste your time for no apparent reason, absolutely do so. Be my guest. You can follow Hall at Dennis Hall WGW. Follow World Gold Wrestling, that's Hall's Club in Wisconsin, on Instagram. That's at World Gold Wrestling. And, of course, you can go ahead and check out Truth of Wrestling on Facebook. Just search it up, Truth of Wrestling, and Hall has a tendency once in a while to post there, whether it's workouts, video clips, training ideas. Yeah, he's actually been spotty with that, too, if I'm being honest. But if you want Hall, those are the three venues you can use to find him. And for USA Greco-Roman news and athlete perspectives, please go to 5pointmove.com. And as always, follow along on Twitter at 5PTMove. That's it for episode 47, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.